This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 37, live from Dubai. Coming up on the show, we answer your questions about delayed onset muscle soreness or just being stiff after training, and how to deal with sledging if you're a bit of a dour batsman. Plus, special guest appearances from Sam Charnley and the boss live at the ICC Academy in Dubai. All that and more on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to playing and coaching better cricket. I'm David Hinchliffe and I'm looking after things at Pitch Vision Towers as always. And I'm joined on the line from Dubai, no less than at the ICC Academy. It's Berners. How's it going, Berners?
Absolutely terrific. It's 30 degrees and I am going pink as we speak.
Yes, well, you're not really designed for the extreme heat, are you? You're not of a dark-skinned persuasion.
I am not, and I am very, very hot right now. However, it's very nice to be here and also in these surrounds, which are terrific for cricket, and I am very, very much feeling empowered for today's show.
Fantastic. Doing your bit for Pitch Vision at ICC. Of course, we got the system going in there, so Berners is doing his bit there. And also on the line from somewhere a little bit closer to me, but no less auspicious, it's Director of Cricket Coaching at the best cricket school in the whole of England, Millfield School, Mark Garraway. Welcome to the show, Garris.
Fantastic to be here. It's 12 degrees. The sun's just about breaking through, and I'm also empowered for this podcast, although I am speaking slightly faster than Berners is.
You're not turning pink then?
I'm not turning pink. Berners, speed your words up, mate. You don't have, just because you're abroad doesn't mean to say that you have to go at 3 miles an hour.
It's just taking a sip of my cocktail in between words.
That's what it is. Now, you, Gareth, you wrote an article recently on Pitch Vision Academy, which was, well, a series of articles, which was about the pathways into cricket coaching. One of the things that you talked about was the role of informal learning. And I just really wanted to follow up with that for people listening. There's a lot of people listening who are coaches with ambitions to perhaps become a coach who can make a career of it. And the importance to you of informal learning.
Well, I think it's huge. And I'm going to take you back to this sort of analogy of when we pass our driving test. So we do what we have to do to pass our driving test. And then in many ways, we then start to learn to drive through our own experience. And our own experience around behind the wheel of a car gives us what we end up being, which is hopefully competent drivers. And I would suggest that the formal learning bit gave us a foundation for us to be a competent driver. But it's our informal experience after we've passed our test that enables us to be that competent driver. And the same applies for coaching. So any coaching course, even if you're getting to the dizzy heights of, for example, an ECB level 4, gives you really good deep foundations, but then it's what you do with it and the opportunities and the experiences that you put around yourself to continue to learn and develop and to be able to apply those skills that you've learned on any given course into the context of your working environment. So that's really crucial, and you know that there are a fantastic number of books which I know we're going to feature in the article coming out later in the week that I recommend to again further extend your knowledge and give you confidence in your in being able to execute and being able to communicate with people in particular. And also, you know, there's some things which I'm going to write about in a couple of weeks' time, which are around getting yourself into different environments, working with different coaches, working in different sports, observing coaches in different sports, which are really, really valuable. Because just because we work in cricket doesn't mean to say that we can't learn from a swimming coach or a hockey coach or a rugby coach. And you might pick up something from a rugby training session that you can apply into your cricket one. You might like the way that a tennis coach talks with an individual and how they use their communication patterns and their language patterns to open up coaching opportunities and coaching intervention opportunities. So there's heaps of stuff that can be done outside of courses, which galvanizes our own learning, which might confirm what you've learned on a course, might even challenge what you've learned on a course, which is also a good thing as well. Mm. So that's the sort of thing that I mean in terms of informal learning. And without that, I would be probably half the coach that I am now, really, because courses can teach you so much. And after that, it's down to the informal learning to really stretch yourself.
It's about being open to ideas, isn't it? And being able to consider ideas and try ideas and try things that aren't necessarily part of what you've learned on a course, but you're open to the idea of trying new ways of doing things and different ways of doing things that aren't necessarily what you originally thought was the correct way to do things. I was I had a discussion this week just gone with somebody on the Pitch Vision Academy website. We were talking about the ways to help keep young players focused on a session when you have a difficult character who doesn't necessarily stay 100% focused on the session, and things that you can do. And he was talking in a very disciplinarian way, and that is a style, and it can be effective. And I said to him, what things can you do to further improve your ability to handle these kind of situations? And his response was that he didn't need to do anything else. And I thought that was slightly a closed-minded way of thinking about things, and that if you think you have all the answers, then you probably don't, because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
I couldn't agree with that last quote more, to be honest, because I wrote a book when I was 19 on cricket coaching, and at the time I thought I was an authority on it, and I was 19 years old, and I actually hadn't actually really coached. I've been coached a lot, so it was a very reactive book, and it sold about 4 copies in South Africa, which was good. And then when I review that book now, I absolutely cringe because you're absolutely right. The more you learn and the more you're exposed to things, the more you realize, crikey, there's quite a lot of gaps in my learning. And then all of a sudden you start to extend and extend and extend. And we talk about that from a learning perspective in coaching, but you can actually think about that as a player as well. So a player thinks they're going along pretty well and they're doing this and that, and then all of a sudden the coach introduces them to a different concept or challenges them in a certain way, and their world gets really much bigger, and then they start to fill that void. And at that point, that's when players start to really, really improve. So we can look at it from two sides, really: our own development as coaches, and also how we can keep pushing the envelope and keep pushing the walls back for the player to grow even more so. And I think that's really, really important. And we see it in our game, don't we? You know, we talked about T20 a minute ago, but you think about, we probably thought that the game was where it was going to stay until 2003 and 2020 came along. And now look at the impact that that's had. And that's done exactly the same. It's pushed back the walls, and everybody fills the gap, don't they? They fill that void with new shots, with new bowling deliveries, with new tactics for trying to restrict scoring, for better fielding positions, for better athleticism, all of those things that have changed since 2003. And in 2002, we'd have never predicted it, because we didn't think that there was anything else out there.
Gareth, it's the bossy. Mm.
Yes, hello, mate. Crikey, it's good of you to jump in.
Well, it was just passing, and I thought I'd drop in on the podcast. You know that book?
Yeah. No, you're not having it.
I bought that book. Can I have my money back?
By all means, mate. I'll give you your R7 or whatever it was that you paid out of your hard-earned cash.
I've got all 4 copies. I want you to sign them, and I'll put them up on the table.
That would take the valley down even more if I put my scrawl on it, mate.
Okay, guys. Nice to pop in. Have a great show. Got to speak.
There goes the boss. Okay, let's wrap this section up then with the yes no round. Every week, 3 questions read by Berners, and Gareth and I can only answer yes or no to them, no matter how much more that we want to say. So Berners, when you're ready, fire away.
First question: innovation is more important than tradition?
Yes.
No.
Second question. iPad is an essential coaching tool.
No.
Yes.
Third question. Fast bowlers in a nasty streak of personality.
No.
No.
Come on, they're all buggers.
It's interview time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and this week I am joined live from Dubai by Sam Charnley, ICC Academy head coach. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thanks, David.
Now, Sam, what is it exactly that occupies your days in Dubai at the ICC Academy?
Look after all the technology here at the Academy, from a very junior level all the way to elite players. But a general day-to-day would be a bit of coaching and then incorporating technology in my coaching.
Yeah, technology is a real move forward for a lot of cricket coaches. And because it's come from the top down, a lot of people still think of technology as something that is only applicable to the elite level. Is that the case from your experience?
No, not at all. We use the technology with a very junior level, from really real beginners to all the way through to obviously elite players that we have come through our doors at the academy. So we start at 2 years of age. We even get cameras on those guys, and then we go all the way to teams like England, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, teams that come through at an international level.
So what advantages does technology bring to a young player or a club-level player who is wanting to improve their skills?
Well, we did a course the other day and we spoke about learners and the way people learn. There's obviously visual learners and kinesthetic learners who like to go out and do the sport, but a lot of people like to watch their visual learners. If they can see themselves on videos, if they can see their data, they can find it at home, they can find it on the internet, and it's specific to themselves, then what better way of learning?
So you find for the right kind of people, it can definitely speed up the process of learning skills and honing skills?
Definitely, and not only for the player, for the coach as well. When he's got a load of data sat in front of him, it's a lot easier to interpret than thinking about games that have previously been or training sessions that he hasn't got any record on.
And I was going to ask you about the coach as well. Data analysis is something that seems quite daunting for a coach who might perhaps be thinking, well, hang on a minute, you know, I just want to throw down a few cones and give someone a bat and have a bat and a bowl and just get on with it. Where does a coach start with that kind of data analysis once it started to become commonplace and is being gathered?
Well, as long as the player is willing to view the data that's collected, I think anything from speed to where the ball's pitching, all that sort of stuff, you can take it from a very, very junior level where a player might just want to see his speed and how fast he's bowling to bowlers bowling different lengths, different lines, death balls, all that sort of stuff.
So start simple.
Start simple, work your way up, yeah.
And the more information, the better. It is becoming a skill to be able to read the information that's coming in. There's so much data available now to coaches at all levels, and it is becoming a skill to be able to do that. But you can get into it quite quickly.
Yeah, especially when, I mean, some systems, it makes it very difficult to view data and interpret it. But one thing you do realise with the PV system, vision system, is that it's so easy to interpret. It's a click of a button, a filter, and all of a sudden you've got exact data that you want to see within seconds, really.
Well, Sam, there's no one in a better position to give a view on the use of technology in cricket these days. So thank you very much for your insights, and thanks for coming on the show today.
Perfect. Pleasure. Thank you.
Right, let's move on to our mailbag. And this is the chance for people listening to the show, just like you, to send in your questions, get them answered on the show, and have a chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Berners is going to read the first of those questions in a moment. But before we do that, Berners, how would someone send in a question to the show if they wanted to get it answered?
They can drop us an email, and the email address is coach@pitchvision.com. Or if they want to use nice old traditional methods and give us a call, because it is lovely to hear from people, the number is 020-323-97543.
Yes, that's very true. And you can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter as well if you want to use one of those newfangled social media websites. What's the first question then, Berners?
Our first question comes in from Steve, and his question is regarding recovery methods. Would it be appropriate to take a protein shake after a game or after training to help reduce soreness? He's saying that these shakes are often used by weightlifters after a session, and saying that he finds stretching and foam rollers also a good idea to decrease some of the muscle soreness after a day's full-on bowling. So what do we reckon, guys?
Well, I would say to answer the specific point about a protein shake, it's not necessary to have a protein shake to reduce muscle soreness, but it is to get protein in, or to get good quality protein and vitamins and minerals into your system after playing a game of cricket is really important. It doesn't necessarily have to be a protein shake. If that works for you, then that's great. But it could just as easily be, you know, an evening meal, which is, you know, of a healthy persuasion, something with some carbohydrates in, something with lean protein in, and you know, it doesn't have to be boring. It doesn't have to be, you know, a chicken breast and a plate of Brussels sprouts. If you don't want it to be, it can be something tasty, but tasty and healthy can go together. So you can do that quite easily, and that's a great way to recover. Sleep is another really important thing. I know a lot of amateur cricketers, if they've had a game of cricket, then maybe a Saturday night is not what they sleep is not the thing that they're thinking about necessarily first of all. But sleep is a great way to recover, and as we talked about in the question, foam rolling, which is getting one of those cylinders of foam, which we've often mentioned, can help you as well. Whether it will stop muscle soreness, that's quite an individual thing, and it depends on your level of fitness and how much cricket you've been playing and how used you are to the amount of cricket that you've been playing. So that's a bit more of a difficult one to actually reduce the soreness. But sleeping, eating, foam rolling are all really good ways to recover quickly and hopefully reduce that soreness, although you may struggle to get rid of it altogether, especially if you've been keeping wicket for 100 overs in a day.
I completely agree. I'm going to reiterate your points there, but I work with a guy called Nigel Stockhill, who's one of my best muckers, a top bloke, for a number of years with England. And he always used to talk to the guys in very simple terms: hydration, nutrition and sleep were his three big ones. And then on top of that, you can add things like the foam roller. So if we talk about foundations, which I talked about earlier, your foundations are those three that you talked about, which is getting hydrated, making sure you're eating properly, and making sure you're getting a good night's sleep. And then that's your foundation. And on top of those, you can put in your foam rollers, your stretching, you can put in your ice baths and all of that sort of stuff. But those need to be put on top of those three core ingredients for recovery. And if that happens, then you're going to give yourself the best chance of not waking up with DOMS, delayed onset of muscle soreness, on too regular a basis. But DOMS are fairly inevitable, particularly when you go from indoor environments to outdoor environments. Mm. And when you go into bowling longer spells and coming back and standing in the field, that's inevitable. It's going to happen. But what you'll find is that the body will adapt if you do your recovery strategies properly, very quickly, and those DOMS will be a thing of the past within a few weeks of the season.
I have it on good authority that in the desert where I am right now, dates and milk are the key to success.
That's a very big point.
Sustained living.
Yeah,
dates and milk. That's a very good point. I went to a cultural centre, an Islamic cultural centre, when I was out there, and was introduced to the benefits of dates. So I completely agree with that. And you can live off dates and water for an incredible amount of time. And the benefit of dates are fantastic. Now, I didn't know that until I visited that centre. And it was a real eye-opener in many ways, not just in terms of recovery and nutrition.
Of particular importance to burners, though, is what is the nutritional value of boiled eggs?
Well, they're fabulous.
Absolutely.
They are. They got lots of good stuff in them, and more importantly than that, they taste good.
Yeah.
That's a show in its own right, gentlemen. I think we should have the egg special around Christmas time. Or Easter, yeah. Our next question comes in from Liam. He's in Sydney, and he contacted us via Facebook, and he's saying that this week he's playing a team that are going to sledge him for being the team's dour batsman. He's just asking whether he should respond, whether he should just be quiet, and also what are some good examples of how to handle sledging. Liam, I reckon drop the hammer, mate, get stuck into them.
Well, he's in Sydney, so there's always going to be a high level of sledging there, isn't there? What do you think, Gareth?
Yeah, good question. I was going to reiterate that point you just made. I mean, you know, Australians have made it an art form, particularly in Sydney. Somebody like Steve Waugh has probably got an academy running there, I'd have thought, to make sure that every club cricketer can give dour batsmen like Liam a bit of stick. So good luck, Liam, on that one. In terms of handling it, there are different ways, and it comes down to personality in many ways. So I'll give you a few examples. Examples of people that have taken different approaches to do it. Some people need to be confrontational, like a Burners, as he's just demonstrated, and go back at people. We have somebody like a Mike Atherton who would just stare the bowler in the eye, because his view on it was at some stage the bowler has to turn back to go to the end of their mark, and that would give him a sense of winning that particular battle. And a fantastic example of that is obviously the Atherton-Donald Trent Bridge encounter, where he did exactly that. And whereas AD was saying things to Athers, Athers said absolutely nothing and just stared him down, knowing he had to turn around at that given time. Now, that worked for Athers because, you know, he needed to get his levels of arousal up to have a fight, really, to get through that particular situation. And he ended up doing that, which was good. Equally, you have people who like just to smile, because as the bowler's getting irate and telling you how crap you are and how you shouldn't be doing this and you don't deserve to be out on the pitch, other players like to just smile back, and that smile can often get underneath the skin of the bowler and start to put the bowler off of what is ultimately the core thing, which is delivering the ball. So a smile can work, but again, that's got to fit in with your personality type. If you are somebody who needs to keep your arousal levels underneath the line to be able to perform under that sort of pressure, then a smile is often good. Other people just look at the ground and away they go. In some ways, I think that encourages teams to keep going at you, because it looks as if sometimes you're not up for the battle. But again, it's not about what it looks like. It's about how it affects you as a batter, Liam. So there's a few examples of how people go about it. Very few people who end up sledging and going back at the opposition can do that with success, because often it takes away and detracts from the core skill of a batter, which is being clear-minded and going into the next ball and playing it on its merits. So just be careful with going back. It sounds to me as if you're probably not somebody that goes back at the opposition and can control what they do next ball. So try a smile, or try just staring that batter down, because you know that they're going to turn around to get back to the end of their mark. It would take one heck of a walk back to the mark to keep a beady eye on you and also hit their mark when they get to the end of their run.
Yeah, that's what Viv Richards said as well in the documentary Fire in Babylon as well, wasn't it? He said he always made sure he was staring at the bowler until he turned round, and then he always made sure he was still staring when the bowler got to the top of his mark.
Absolutely. Pretty intimidating, I should imagine that.
Now that is intimidation, isn't it? That's that's one way of handling it, isn't it? But not everyone's Viv Richards, and if you're a dour batsman, perhaps, you know, you're not going to be smashing a length ball over mid-wicket.
I often think a smile goes a real long way in those situations as well, because it has the knack of being kind of unresponsive yet knowingly confident
that you've taken on board what the guy has said to you, and you either feel a need not to reply or that you're in perfect control of the situation?
Well, personally, I always chip back. But I always try and do it in a way that is, you know, self-depreciating. If someone says to me, you're absolutely rubbish, then I'll just agree with them. I'll say, yes, yeah, I am rubbish. That's why I'm playing against you. And that's, I don't know why, but if you get a laugh out of somebody standing at slip when the bowler's sledging you, I always think to myself, well, I've won that battle. I might fire up the bowler a bit more, I don't know, but I can't help but say something back. I guess that's just my way of dealing with it. I think in Liam's case, a lot of sledging is you can learn to ignore just by, because it's nonsense. If someone says you're rubbish when you play a miss, you know, so what? You know, everybody plays and misses. But if someone says you're too slow, mate, you're batting like boycott, and that gets to you, as in you feel like you are, that is one of your weaknesses as a batsman, that you can't score quickly enough, then that's the thing you've got to worry about. Anything that takes you out of playing the next ball in the same way that you would always play it is the thing you've really got to be able to handle. And that's where it gets a lot more difficult. And so that's where you need a strategy like Gareth's. The different strategies that Gareth has talked about there with dealing with sledging. But the internally, I think your reaction to it, external reaction to it, is driven by your internal reaction to it. And if you can just laugh at it, whatever someone has said, and ignore it and feel like it has no effect on you, then it doesn't matter what you do externally, I don't think. Right, let's move on to this week's Pitch Vision headline. So Daisy Cutter is waiting for us in the newsroom.
Thank you, guys. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. Simon Tuffle stops by to review Pitch Vision. The Australian former Test umpire is now in charge of elite umpiring for the ICC and was keen to see Pitch Vision in action and how it can be used in adjudicating LBW decisions. One major consideration is to use the system to judge if the ball has pitched inside or out of the line of the stumps. More on this story very soon. Meanwhile, over on Pitch Vision Interactive, we're celebrating the best of the left. Left-handers are always a hot topic, but who are the best southpaws on Pitch Vision? PW Cricket from South Africa has 84 wickets, but the 19-year-old Englishman, Matthew 3/8, has the Pace Trophy with 112 km per hour average. England also takes the batting award, as Leavers has notched up 457 at an average of 13.85. Finally, rumours that copies of the Mark Garraway's legendary coaching book have been unearthed in a second-hand bookstore. Unfortunately for fans of the Millfield director of cricket coaching, the dust levels that have gathered are so severe that no human can approach the books without instantly collapsing. Perhaps we will never know what was inside. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's Pitch Vision News for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Thank you very much, Daisy, and we'll hear again from you next week. So Berners, have you seen Daisy nosing around the ICC? She seems to know a lot about what you're doing in Dubai at the moment.
Yeah, she was out on Oval One just now, actually reseeding the square. So I think she's all very good. And Daisy, yep, she's definitely run out of seeds. She has disappeared.
Well, you say that. I think she's a master of disguise. You know, you could be walking past a camel, and lurking inside a camel suit is Daisy picking up all the news and all the gossip from Pitch Vision from you. So watch out, Berners.
I did send her off to get some dates and some more milk, so we'll see what she comes back with.
Time for this week's soapbox. 1 minute, uninterrupted. Mark Garraway, fire away.
It's been an interesting few weeks, and the ODI series between Australia and England in England has got a bit of stick, isn't it? You know, for being two sides that aren't going to be playing against each other much, and this, that, and the other. But actually, it's produced some interesting stories to me. And the interesting stories that come out of it, I think England have used it very well to unearth a couple of players and to find out a bit more about their bigger squad going forward into the 2015 World Cup. And the likes of Joss Butler and Boyd Rankin in particular have put themselves further into the selectors' minds for that World Cup that are going forward. And probably for Boyd, who's an ex-Ireland player that I had over there, is going to be on the plane to Australia, going to the Ashes, I reckon, as well, which will be good for him. And also, it shows that the Australians have done some good work on the England top three in the Test side, because Trott has been done over and needs to come back with something. Cook needs to come back with something. And also, Joe Root needs to come back with something. So there's some intriguing battles ahead, which have all come out of this ODI series.
Okay, that's the end of the show for this week. Before we leave, though, Mark Garraway has one more job to do, which is to decide on the winner of this week's competition, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. We had Steve's question about recovery methods and Liam's question about being sledged for being a dour batsman. Which one did you prefer, Gareth?
Well, I preferred Liam's, and I'm going to give him a couple of courses that he could go to. And no disrespect to Steve, but I think, Liam, you're looking to not be quite so dour. You've got a fantastic resource in Kevin Peterson's batting resource there. You've got Michael Bevan's batting resource, both of which were good at getting off strike, good at hitting boundaries. There might be something in either of those two courses which can help you to increase your shot making, as well as giving the smile back to the bowler or giving him a stare after he's given you some grief.
Yeah, congratulations, Liam. Hopefully you can do a pincer movement on the batting, the mental side and the technical side, all attacking in one go there. Now, if someone was listening now and wanted to get in touch with the show, it's quite easy to do so, to send in your question, get it answered, and have your chance to win the prize, which is, of course, has just been won by Liam, the online coaching course. You can email us, coach@pitchvision.com. You can give us a call, 0203-239-7543. You can find us on Twitter at pitchvisionacad, and you can also drop your questions into our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. Thousands of people over there doing exactly the same thing. So drop your question in. If it's a good one, you'll get onto the show. Now, if you want to subscribe to the show and listen to it every week, then you can do so in all the normal ways that you would do so with a podcast. iTunes is the key one. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in iTunes. And if you don't want to use iTunes, there is a link on pitchvision.com to the podcasts page, where you can use whatever podcast catching program that you want to use. So that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Bernice.
Cheers, fella.